Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A gay mayor and tolerance triumph in Berlin, the life and literature of a legendary gay author, and new words and music by three Marys, a solo Sonia, and the one and only Janice Ian in The Audiophile. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 27th, 2001. Berlin voters this week elected Germany's first major openly gay politician, Klaus Wowereit, to a full term as mayor. Wowereit was not widely known until June, when he publicly identified himself as a gay man as his Social Democratic Party nominated him to serve as interim mayor. The Berlin Assembly then voted him into the interim post. In this week's election, Berlin's SPD took about 30% of the vote, up about a third from Berlin's last election in 1999. The previously dominant conservative Christian Democrats lost nearly half of their 1999 votes, with a mayoral candidate who had described Wowereit as having a deformed character. Wowereit said, "The signal from this election is that Berlin is a tolerant city, an international city, and it doesn't matter which skin color or religion or life orientation a person has." Lacking a majority in the assembly, Wowereit must now form a governing coalition. One option is a partnership with the Party of Democratic Socialism, the former rulers of post-communist East Germany, whose votes swelled to nearly equal the Christian Democrats. The other option is to join with both the fast-growing Free Democrats, described as a pro-business party, and the Greens, the coalition partners of the National SPD. Wowereit said that tolerance would be a factor in his decision.
While serving as interim mayor, Wowereit personally congratulated Berlin's first gay and lesbian couples to contract Germany's new registered life partnerships on August 1st. Almost 3 months later, those partnerships will finally become available in the conservative state of Bavaria following a vote of the state parliament this week. Bavaria had sued and lost in Germany's constitutional court to try to overturn the national partnership law as damaging the special status of marriage. Bavaria will only take up its state responsibility to implement the national law beginning November 1st. Germany's registered partnerships confer legal recognition on same-gender couples in areas including inheritance, social security benefits, co-adoption of a partner's child, and the right to use a partner's surname.
Legal recognition for gay and lesbian couples came to the floor this week in the parliaments of both Britain and the Czech Republic. Although the votes went in opposite directions, neither bill is expected to be enacted in the current legislative session. The first vote ever on the subject in Britain's House of Commons supported Labour Member of Parliament Jane Griffith's Relationships Civil Registration Bill by a 3-1 margin. But as a private member's bill rather than part of the ruling party's legislative agenda, only 10 minutes of debate was allowed, and passage is unlikely. During that brief debate, another Labour MP, Stuart Bell, said the registry should be put to a nationwide vote because it would serve to redefine marriage. The proposed civil registration would confer recognition as next of kin and rights in areas including inheritance, pensions, social security, and accident compensation. It has the active support of Britain's national gay and lesbian advocacy group, Stonewall.
The Czech Republic's Chamber of Deputies didn't outright reject the government's bill for registered partnerships, but has probably effectively stalled its passage until after 2002 elections by returning it to the government for revision. The Czech national group Gay Initiative, which supported the bill, was encouraged that the current bill didn't get the same parliamentary thumbs down as its two predecessors. With 21 abstentions, 85 votes to return the bill topped 60 to debate it as presented, with the Conservative Christian Democrats and Civic Democratic Party opposing the bill, and the Social Democrats and Communists supporting it. The Catholic Church has also actively lobbied against the bill. The proposed registered partnerships would confer rights in areas including inheritance and health care.
And in the U.S., although California has just enacted a law greatly expanding the legal benefits of its partnership registry, a bill to create even broader Vermont-style civil unions for gays and lesbians was heard in a state assembly committee this week. Democratic Assemblymember Paul Koretz of West Hollywood introduced the bill called the Family Protection Act, AB 1338, describing it as the final frontier in equal rights. One legal expert told the committee the bill would not violate the state constitutional amendment passed by voters last year to restrict legal marriage to one man and one woman, since the word marriage would not be applied. But two anti-gay religious right groups warned that civil unions would damage traditional marriage. Even sponsor Koretz estimated it could take 6 years to enact his bill.
The Family Pride Coalition warns that a California state appellate court decision this week threatens gay and lesbian second parent adoptions. For 15 years, California courts have allowed gay and lesbian co-parents to co-adopt their partner's biological children. It's been the only means by which those co-parents could gain legal recognition, although when the new partnership law goes into effect in 2002, they'll be able to use the simpler step-parent adoption procedure. But in the San Diego case called Sharon S. versus Superior Court, a California appeals court overturned two adoptions by the co-parent known as Annette F., finding that trial courts had never had the authority to grant second-parent adoptions. The unprecedented ruling reportedly could affect thousands of children. It's expected to be appealed to the California Supreme Court.
But a partnered gay father in Brazil has won custody of his 2-year-old daughter in preference to her mother in what's believed to be the nation's first court decision to recognize a gay couple's parental rights. Gay biological father Jose Diaz has lived with his male partner for 15 years.
In Taiwan, a transsexual was allowed to legally adopt an unrelated child for the first time this week. The family laws of the Republic of China do not explicitly refer to transsexuality. It's taken trans woman Shang Xieling 5 months to become the legal mother of a now 6-month-old baby, as the Shaiyi District Court at first looked askance at her sexual history and her occupation as an entertainer. The court was finally convinced, after additional investigation, that Shang has adequate family support to raise the boy. The baby was born by an unknown father to Shang's next-door neighbor, who's currently incarcerated. The grandfather who's raising him supports Shang's adoption. Shang plans to name her baby Shang Tawen.
South African gays and lesbians have won an apology from the National Census Agency for its failure to recognize same-gender couples and a promise that they will be counted. One item in the Census 2001 questionnaire explicitly prohibits gay and lesbian couples from identifying their status as unmarried yet living together, while another item denies them the automatic right to decide whether to indicate the nature of their relationship, according to a complaint filed with the South Africa Human Rights Commission. This week, Statistics SA head Polly Lahola said that the problem has been fixed, saying that in both the actual training of enumerators and in the census questionnaires itself, it is made clear that same-sex couples are to be enumerated in the same way as any other couple living together as part of a household.
Australia's upcoming federal elections feature yet another first, as the Australian Democratic Party selected both members of a Perth gay male couple as candidates for office. Well-known activist and lobbyist Damien Meyer is nominated for Australia's Senate and his partner, Rod Swift, for the House of Representatives. Swift told the Sydney Star-Observer that standing as a couple has a strong symbolic message for people. We've moved the goalposts and said our relationships are a reality, not an argument. Controversial legislation to recognize same-gender couples is currently in process in the legislature of Myers and Swift's home state of Western Australia, whose current laws are the least favorable to gays and lesbians of any state in Australia.
As organizers in Sydney, Australia, announced plans this week for the cultural festival associated with the 2002 Gay Games, international organizers were already looking ahead to 2006. Meeting on the African continent for the first time in Johannesburg, the Federation of Gay Games announced its selection of Montreal as the site for the 7th quadrennial Olympic-style competition. The hotly contested site selection won mainstream international media attention because the Gay Games have become big business. The Montreal Games are projected to draw more than 23,000 competitors. The Sydney Games, expected to have 14,000 participants, have already set a record with more than 4,000 registrations received more than a year ahead of time.
And finally, New York City's 10% Productions this week launched a million-dollar ad campaign for 10, a fragrance marketed specifically for gay men and claimed to contain natural attractants. 10's slogan is, "Gain confidence, seduce the senses, get the man." But New Zealand's Maria Nature Catalog is seeking gay male customers for more unusual merchandise, thongs and nipple warmers made of possum fur. The company compares the fur to mink, but it's politically correct. It's taken from the brush-tailed possum, a pest whose use for fur is reportedly advocated by all New Zealand's environmental groups.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 27th, 2001. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
The latest offering from the audiophile features Political Harmony from Provincetown, a live acoustic show recorded in eastern Tennessee, and a perceptive new release from a prolific veteran. Chris Wilson and J.D. Doyle will join us with new words and music by some exceptionally talented gay and lesbian performers later in the program.
Every day.
Felice Picano is the author of more than 20 books, including best-selling novels The Lure, Looking Glass Lives, and this year's Onyx, as well as nonfiction works like The New Joy of Gay Sex and the literary memoir Men Who Loved Me. His 1995 release, Like People in History, won the founder of the legendary Violet Quill Club the Farrow Grumley Award for Best Gay Novel. This Way Out's Steve Pride had a chance to chat with Picano about his life's work and gay life.
Felice Picano could easily rest on his laurels as a pioneer of gay literature. His work spans over a quarter century and moves effortlessly between genres. But Picano still has a lot to say. This year, he contributed memories of friend Robert Farrow to the anthology Loss Within Loss and released a semi-autobiographical novel, Onyx.
Onyx is about the last 2 years of my life in New York City when I was losing my partner and my best friend to AIDS, essentially when the sort of well-to-do middle-class houses in the country and cars life was totally falling apart. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to write a book about that that would show what that was like for people who may not have experienced that, almost as a sort of warning to the younger people who are mainstreaming so avidly that this is not going to save them if something really goes wrong. And also because I wanted to tell that story and to memorialize a really difficult period in my life. And because I'd not done anything about it, this all happened about a decade ago, and I'd done nothing about it, and I thought it was time to write about it and, you know, get it off my chest. And I was very worried about how people would react to something like that. But the reactions so far have been amazingly positive. And what makes it a little bit different, I think, from most books of this sort is the fact that the main character, who'd more or less based on me, at the same time that his lover is dying, begins a physical affair with a straight, quote, straight, younger married man, which lasts throughout the entire period of the book. And so I'm going out of my way to open up the can of worms, the big scandal about straight and gay men in America. And we hear so much about the violent connections they make, and there are other connections that they make also.
Tell me about Loss Within Loss.
This is an anthology put together by the Estate Project, Alliance for the Arts, which seeks to show what happened as a result in the artistic community in the United States as a result of the AIDS epidemic. And nobody's really done anything about this before in terms of actually memorializing people or just even listing people who were lost.
It's very easy for artists to slip away. You say, well, they haven't had a new painting lately. I haven't seen them on television. I haven't seen their new book.
Right. I think there are 17 or 18 artists who are specified in it. And they're of such a diverse group that I think we have to pay attention as a result of that.
Let's talk about Robert Farrow, who you celebrate in the book.
Robert Farrow was a friend of mine and was also part of a group called the Violet Quill Club that I belong to, along with Edmund White, Andrew Holleran, Robert's partner of many years, Michael Grumley, Christopher Cox, and George Whitmore. We came together in the late 70s, I figure about a decade after Stonewall, in an attempt to try to put together a serious gay literature in this country. And it was a benevolent conspiracy of seven people with various hangers-on. And it seems to have taken. It seems to have worked. But Robert was one of the people who was the social glue of the group, because it was a social group as much as it was a literary group.
Edmund White said it was about the desserts.
Well, the desserts got pretty fabulous, I have to admit. But the desserts were part of the social glue also. No, what it was about was we were supporting each other's work. We were all writing gay literature at a time in which there was no such thing. Every once in a while, there would be a gay book published or a homosexual book published, let's put it that way. And there were a great many of them at the time, you know, like two every year or something like that. But there was nothing that really dealt with the fact that there was already in existence a gay community, which was all across the country and to some extent all across the world, which we knew existed because we lived within one. So we just really got together and said, let me give you an example of how this worked. Edmund White, who was at that point a very well-known writer within a literary set in New York City, which was when at that time everything was really happening in New York City. Although he had many homosexual friends in literature, including some very famous people, none of them were writing gay literature or none of them were interested in the idea of gay literature. They didn't see much point to it. So he really had nobody to discuss what he was doing with. Neither did I, neither did Andrew Holleran, neither did anybody, in fact. So the idea was us to get together, to read the works that we were doing in progress, you know, works in progress, and to sort of check up and confirm for each other that this was the right thing that we were doing and that it was a good idea.
A few of the members passed away.
More than half.
So many wonderful artists, singers, dancers, writers that would have gone on to leave behind a larger body of work, their lives cut short, leaving behind not very much.
In terms of literature and just among my group, Robert Farrow wrote, I think it was five books. And although he said he was done and that he had written everything that he had to, when he died, he was 47 years old. I'm 10 years older than that already, and I know that there were books that I have written as a result of undergoing those past 10 years. So obviously a man as talented and thoughtful as he was would have written more, and it would have gotten, I believe it would have gotten better and deeper and more interesting. So the loss is to us. And that's true with many different writers. There were so many that we lost to it.
Many writers bristle at the term gay writer. Is that something that bothers Felice Bacano?
Not at all.
Do you think that there is a gay male artistic aesthetic?
Well, if there is, I don't have it. I wrote my first memoir, which is called Ambidextrous, The Secret Lives of Children, because all the growing up stories that I had read by gay people were about sensitive youths who had been artistic and readers and, you know, who felt tormented by their friends. And looking back on my own life, I realized I was probably one of the people who tormented them. And I had played sports and run around with my own group. You know, we lived on our bicycles. And I grew up as a regular boy, you know. I mean, you know, we did odd things like sniffing glue and having sex together. But aside from that, it was a pretty ordinary American childhood. And I wrote that book just to make sure that there was something out there showing that you didn't have to have a sensitive, overly aesthetic youth to turn out to be, you know, gay the way I was.
Where do you see gay literature going?
All over the place. I think gay literature is very healthy and doing very, very well.
So what is a gay book?
Well, I don't know what it is. What I write about is gay life in America, more or less today. And not enough people really are dealing with issues that I write about. And there seems to be so much material out there still to be written about. You know, so much is happening. We have no lack of readers, that's for sure.
This has been a conversation with author Felice Bacano. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Every day, every day, every day, every day, every day I like the book.
Hello, this is Edmund White, the author of Genet, a biography, and A Boy's Own Story. You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
As we open this month's audio file, it's all right when the alumni of two favorite vocal groups unite. There's Hootin' and Hollerin' for a solo performer live at the Down Home, and a legendary singer-songwriter whose career has frequently been controversial takes aim at God and the FBI.
Calling all dreamers and optimistic fools.
Don't let go of your dreams. Make them now. Make them all come true. If you believe in a brighter day, I know we can find our way.
The Three Marys come out of Provincetown with a close harmony sound and lyrics that are way out of the closet. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. John Arterton of the Flirtations and Mary Jo Perenzino and Mary Abt of the group Destiny unite for what might be called political harmony.
As for our musical style, I think it's a sort of a melding of our past two groups, the Flirtations and Destiny. We do a lot of numbers which are a cappella, like the Flirtations, and even in those songs where we do use a piano, we're very conscious about keeping the texture very skeletal so that the lyric can really come through in a way that can't be missed.
There's something inside so strong, I know that I can make it. Though you're doing me wrong, so wrong, you thought that my pride was gone. Oh, no, there's something inside so strong. Oh, no, there's something inside so strong.
You can find out more about the Three Marys at www.thethreemarys.com.
Sonia's third solo album is called Live at the Down Home, and it's a mixture of her solo work as well as some Disappear Fear songs. But here they are performed with the special intimacy of a live performance.
The Down Home is a little fun acoustic joint in eastern Tennessee in Johnson City. I love playing there. It's totally live. Really, there's as much audience on it as there is me. Lots of hooting and hollering and going crazy and a lot of sweat. Nothing's corrected. It's all right there.
She grew up on the Bible and she grew up on love. She grew up thinking she could change the world if she only worked hard enough. So she became a lawyer, hoped to marry a good-looking man. But she fell in love with the girl next door, so that wasn't part of the plan. But America shines in front of me. All the world could see if they wanted to erase this flag for you. Me too.
You can learn more about the music of Sonia and Disappear Fear at www.disappearfear.com.
For those who may think she disappeared following the commercial success of Jesse and At 17, make no mistake, Janice Ian is still a prolific songwriter and as talented as ever.
When I was a kid, playing like a girl was about one of the rudest things you could say to a musician. You run like a girl, you play like a girl, you throw like a girl. And nowadays, the only answer to it is, well, duh, I'm female.
We asked her if she considered her career to be a successful one.
I don't know what success is anymore. You know, as cliched as that sounds, 20 years ago, even maybe 10 years ago, success would have been having another hit record. Right now, I feel real successful that I'm out of debt except for my mortgage and my car, and I managed to put my partner through law school, and I lead a life that's congruent with my work. I think that's successful. Beyond that, I don't know anymore.
Her latest CD, God and the FBI, was released before the September 11 tragedy. but includes one track that is particularly touching in light of recent events.
They say there was a fire on the night it died. All I am is gone. Still the soul holds on. They tell me I'm a hero on the other side. Oh, but all that I remember is the children were in danger. On the other side, children laugh and sing. On the other side, angels earn their wings. On the other side, on the other side, they say that you were with me when the building fell. Strange to have you near after all these years. They say I couldn't possibly have done it by myself. Did you see our photographs as they crumbled into ash? On the other side, children laugh and sing. On the other side, angels earn their wings. On the other side.
You can find out more about Janice Ian and her CD, God and the FBI, on her website at www.janiceian.com.
We hope you have enjoyed this edition of Audiophile. You can write to us at P.O. Box 429, Sunland, California, 91041, or online at info@audiophile.org. That's info@audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Chris Ambidge, Brian Nunes, Jason Lynn, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Steve Pride, and Chris Wilson, J.D. Doyle, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Jalen Ricks performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. Just point your browser to www.planetout.com and click first on Multimedia, then on Radio. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. For an urgent message about This Way Out's perilous financial situation, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For my partner in crime, Lucia Chappell, and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on C101 Hamilton, Ontario, KDUR Durango, Colorado, WEFT Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Do stay tuned.